This is the September 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Doherty. He's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Their office is in West Bend, Wisconsin. John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities. That office is in Lafayette, Indiana. And in Atchison, Kansas, is Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. There you'll find our daily programming to listen to and information from the agricultural economist, the FarmDoc team, along with the crop scientist and the animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Brian Doherty, what's on your list beyond the USDA reports released this morning, or maybe within them?
Well, I think one thing we want to just mention, at least focus on, is just maybe globally world weather events that are beginning to sort of unfold and what that might look like in 2024 and 25 in particular. I'd like to relate that back to where pricing of corn is for 25, in particular for the end user and what the value that might bring. So just looking at a bigger global picture on weather.
John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities.
Well, a couple things. I'm interested in where this corn yield might be going. Boy, the early yield reports, Indiana, Illinois, are big. USDA reduced the Illinois corn yield by 3, raised Iowa. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. But I'm very intrigued with the numbers I'm hearing so far. And bean exports, USDA still has us at 1.85, but we're trailing last year badly, which turned out to be 1.7. So that's a brewing story, and it eventually could open up the downside on these soybeans. So when does it start raining in Mato Grosso? That's a huge piece of it as well.
And Mike Zuzlow.
Only thing I would add, Todd, is the pre-report mindset. You know, could we break free with the dollar break and the wheat turn to the upside? Could we break free from that 2014 type price action type model year where beans led us lower into the end of September? And also the old crop corn stocks. I thought that was a very big piece of the puzzle when it came to the WASDE report on Thursday, and something I don't think many of us were really expecting or watching for at this point.
Well, let's start there. I would like to talk about what they changed in the previous marketing year. Now we're in the what we were calling new crop. It's now old crop. But let's talk about last year's old crop now. Exports as well as other numbers of feed and residual in particular. There was, what, a 55 million bushel change, I think, in total. Can you break those down for me and why you think it's important?
Yeah, and I'll stick with the corn from a standpoint of what we opened with. We are now down from June, and the June WASDE report for 23-24 corn ending stocks from 2,022,000,000 bushels to 1.8 billion. That's a 10% decline in about 3-4 months. And it wasn't done due to production. Production since June has remained unchanged for the old crop at 15.3 plus billion, Todd. The real story was the total usage. It's up almost 5%, went from 14.7 in June up to 14.92. And so this really calls to question what we've been thinking about in my mind the last 4 weeks about how much old crop corn was going to burden this market, how much of an issue was going to be with the September stocks reports, and just the idea that the corn market is still playing in the wheat camp instead of breaking free with a really surprisingly strong demand, a demand that many of us, and I think on this panel, all felt like it had the potential to do, and it kind of wraps real well with Brian's comments and John's comments about the South American weather and about where we are when it comes to our supplies versus the world supplies. And I think we're really close, I think, to wanting to jump from U.S. ending stocks maybe over to the world as far as what the funds and the market looks at.
And what does that say to you? What condition are those stocks in? Are they burdensome? Are they not?
No, I mean, after today, or after I should say Thursday's numbers, world corn stocks to use dropped to about 25.3%. That's a 10-year low. That matches with the wheat world stocks to use at a 10-year low as well. You know, just completely night and day different from where we're at with world soybeans and world soybean stocks to use ratios. And so that's, I think, where I've been very light on corn sales in 24, very heavy on bean sales. And it's mainly because of this world supply demand fundamental. And I still think USDA's got some numbers to have to crunch and lower when it comes to 23 Brazil crop and 24 Ukraine crop.
It'll be interesting to see what they do, and we'll watch those numbers as they come out monthly in the WASDE. However, John Zanker, I want to stay with the old crop in a couple of different ways. The grain stocks report, I look forward to that now, will be out at the end of the month. This is when USDA will give us what really is, from its accounting, for soybeans, a good ending stocks number for the last marketing year. For corn, they now mostly say that's the case. They used to say we had to wait until January, but now they say that once we get that number, it's pretty good anymore. However, I've got some questions about that. Because they have been lowering these numbers in the WASDE figures, at least what's on hand over the last several months, how good do you think this grain stocks figure coming up, or how hard will it be for them to come up with it, and how accurate of an accounting is it, I suppose, to begin with? I guess USDA says it's an accurate accounting, and it really is a census from all those places that are storing grain as well.
Well, I feel pretty comfortable that, and it should be, that it's the most accurate stocks number of the year. And I would expect that to be a little tighter, so I wouldn't be surprised to see that Indian carryout number drop below 1.8, so that'll be supportive. And then, you know, it's now we're going to get that number on that day, we're going to have a whole lot of corn coming to market. And there's still long lines at these elevators and processors of old crop corn. Most of the trucks sitting in these long lines right now are carrying old crop corn. So that continues to be a burden. Maybe not quite as much of a burden as we anticipated, at least on price. But I think what's going on in Brazil is already impacting corn. What's going on down there in Mato Grosso has a bigger impact on corn yield than it does on bean yields. They could start planting 3 or 4 weeks from now in those northernmost areas of Mato Grosso and still have a full bean crop. But you get to the point where you're planting that second crop corn late, and you can just about set your watch to the hot and dry season in northern Brazil. So I think that's keeping some people interested. And the last 2 to 3 weeks in the Corn Belt, been on the dry side too, and has certainly taken some bushels off the top end.
Yeah, so for clarification's sake, there are three different corn crops that are harvested across the nation of Brazil, and sometimes three of them in the same area as well. One of them has already started to go into the ground. I think about 15% of the corn crop had been planted as of earlier in the week. The second crop corn will follow the soybean crop, which is what John was discussing. And if that's late, then it puts it into the potential of having an issue with entering the dry season when it's in the middle of its productivity. And that last one is now in the process down there as well. And it's a very small third crop corn. So Brian Doherty, as you're listening to this and thinking about what this all means, what have you been considering as it's related to the grain stocks and the old crop ending stocks for corn?
Yeah, so a couple of things, Todd, just to kind of make note, and to me, we're in a window of uncertainty from the USDA. And what I mean by that is if you look back to last year, raised the yield in November, raised the yield in January, something we don't typically see. And I think that's trying to get their hands around their best guess of what the crop really was. And that still is going to come out through various means, probably the quarterly stocks report here at the end of the month. I think the marketplace has its eye on and taking a look at longer term pictures of demand, longer term price. Low prices have a tendency, as we all know, to create demand and cure low prices. Corn's a very valued commodity right now. I think that view of the Southern Hemisphere is critical and right on. Look at the way the market responded today. It had a chance to push and sell off hard, and what did it do? It ran out of selling interest, and only while it only finished a penny and a quarter higher in December, finished well off the low, posted an outside trading day, and climbed itself back above several critical moving averages. It's a really nice signal on the charts, but again, it's this mindset that two things are happening. As I talk to producers, they're not interested in selling any new crop at this current level. They've got a long time to market the crop. And then two, when you look at these world weather, I'm going to say maps, you can call it whatever you want, but I'm going to talk about global climate change, whether you believe that or not, or world weather change. And I think we got to leave ourselves some room that the market could experience some challenges producing crops. We've had two large world crops in a row, little disruptions, and yet you continue to see record world temperatures. You'd argue that global climate change is good for global crops. Maybe it is. But it might be disruptive along the way as well. And you're going to see things like I think we're seeing in Brazil right now, where the talk is already of pushing the crop back. That's a big deal. Look at our crop here. You're likely to see, I think, some reduction in yield in the next month's report due to this dry weather. I think you'll see it particularly on soybeans. Our soybean producers in southern Illinois and Indiana are reporting to us that their yields have been diminished. They're still good, but they're not excellent. So as a big global picture perspective, I think these prices of corn, the price for corn, I should say, for 2025, D's 2025 at 445 is much too low. That's not encouraging acreage. Farmers reduced acreage this past year. I think as we look ahead, we're going to have to see a fight for acres and see that D's corn move higher. We'll find out just how quickly the world, you know, tries to chase low-priced corn if this drier weather starts to permeate at a longer-term pace, in particular central Brazil.
Yeah, so I'll be in deep southern Illinois on Wednesday next week, and you're right. There are dry conditions across the Midwest and drought conditions in the deepest parts of Illinois. I'll get a good look at that on that day near Vienna and some other places as I'm working on some other things for the university. You did want to talk a bit more about pricing new crop corn, and I think this is a good place to let you do that, Brian, because we're still in the middle of this weather conversation as it's related to the soybeans and its relationship to corn and planting dates in Brazil at this point. How far into our fall, their spring, does the planting date for soybeans need to be pushed before you think there's a real market reaction? For instance, we haven't gotten to the middle of September, which was their old starting date. They have been allowed to plant earlier now, but most of the meteorologists have not gotten worried yet that they won't get rainfall. How deep do we have to go before things change?
I think you push it to almost October 1st. I'm not a big fan of believing that a dry spring is a train wreck, but I'm looking at general trends. So a couple other comments I want to make on that is that I think the market focus will start to turn that direction. Now, here we are the 12th. It's the next thing that's coming up, and it's what I'm going to say, it's real. So it's nothing to dismiss. I don't want to sound hypocritical. My customers have asked me over the years, you know, when do we start paying attention to South American weather? And I said, well, not in September, but we have to acknowledge it. So we're acknowledging, but I don't think it has supply-demand changing implications just yet, but that's coming up quickly. But circling back to Illinois, Indiana in particular, some of the southern states. I don't know if the dry weather that's been encompassing those regions for the last, let's say, 6 weeks is going to diminish corn yield significantly. I think that crop got off to such a robust start. It's hard to imagine that, but I do think we'll find that the bean yield. What I found most interesting today on today's report was the bushel percentage change from the previous year in particular Minnesota, down 1.1% from a year ago, 183 bushels. And then Ohio, 187, down 5.6. But those are still really robust yields in areas that had just train wreck. Minnesota was a train wreck for spring planting. And Ohio has been really struggling. You look at the drought monitor map, and it's right in the heart of a really deep colored map that is showing continuous dry patterns. So I don't think this corn number seems a little high to me. I think we're probably headed toward the 182 before it's said and done.
Okay, Mike Suslow, that brings me back to you. Can we break free, and he may have set the terms for this, from the 2014 analog year, which continued to drive lower into the month of September?
I think we can if the wheat's doing it, Todd. I think wheat is the excellent bridge to get us to where we need to go and not have beans lead us lower like we saw in 2014. It was a really tough mid-September to the end of September. I think just around $9, $9.08, something like that, was where we bottomed out in 2014 on September 30th for November beans. But wheat is very close, with the September futures getting ready to expire on Friday, very close to retesting its July high in soft red of 573. If we close above that on Friday, I think that would stimulate some more short covering. And, you know, before the report came out, we heard about another grain ship being hit by a missile in the Black Sea. This just adds to probably almost a daily update coming out of the Black Sea of ideas that supplies are tightening up and demand is not as bad. And some European traders commented on this at the end of the week, this week, that the demand is not that bad when it comes to Europe and the Black Sea as far as wheat demand. And it sounds like Egypt probably came in and took on a lot of Russian wheat. So I still think wheat is an excellent bridge because it kind of covers the copper and the crude oil. And let's be blunt, the Chinese data this week has not been pretty. It's not been good. It's been very deflationary, and that goes against what I thought it would be. And it holds a lot of concern, that in the U.S. election, in terms of the dollar being pumped up. So I like the fact that we have a weaker dollar, a turn in the wheat. I'd like to see that continue. And if that does continue, then I think the corn can divorce itself from the soybean complex, especially with what the other guys are talking about with South America and Brazil weather.
It is probably important to note that the Russians tagged that grain ship that had left the Danube, or the western coast of the Black Sea area. So it was it had come out of areas that were the new safe exporting range. It's been that way all summer long until this time around. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. Mike, also today during the closing market report on Thursday, Mike Tenora wanted to talk about the Black Sea, particularly Ukraine and Russia, as it's related to dry and droughty conditions there, and the issues that it might really cause for sowing their winter wheat for next season. Have you been thinking about that as it's related to the conversation we're having?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have the harvest pressure when it comes to the wheat market that you do the row crops. And you also, along with the Black Sea staying dry for winter wheat, you also see that the Hurricane Francine remnants really have not given the hard red wheat country any reprieve whatsoever from a very dry past 60 days or so. So I do think that adds to the idea that the wheat market has the best fundamentals and the seasonality to it to find a low before the corn and before the soybeans. And I'll just throw out the Black Sea. When we talked about the Ukrainian corn, I'm down around a 21.5 to 22 million metric ton corn crop for Ukraine for this current marketing year, Todd. And the USDA number stayed unchanged at 27.2. So I would reiterate the idea that I think we could shave some global corn production still at this stage of the game, even though it's late and Ukraine is just like us harvesting.
John Zenker, can you build a positive view of the corn market as well?
Well, I think both Brian and Mike have, you know, talked about a lot of what's going on in the world, and I think that's huge. And again, I think I think what's going on in Mato Grosso now is a much bigger deal for corn than it is soybeans. Domestically, I might Might disagree a little bit on yield. We're hearing some awfully big yields, some ridiculously big yields in parts of Illinois, eastern Illinois in particular at this point, but also western Illinois. The sample size isn't big, but some of these are coming from customers of mine that I've been working with for over 35 years. One farmer this morning, south of Attica, in a field that's going 258, which is 40 bushels over its average. I think, you know, on August 1st, August 7th, I could have, with a good finish to August, confidently predicted a 186, 187, 188 corn crop. I think we were in just that good of shape. Beans, a pro farmer, found 54.9. I think we were easily on our way to that. Had we gotten some widespread solid rains in the second half of August into the first week of September, but we didn't. I often state, I've been saying this for 30 some years, that August is my least favorite month of the year, and this is the reason why. I've seen so many crops that just look spectacular going into the middle of August that we just couldn't finish them off. And you know, we're doing that again with soybeans. Interestingly, Pro Farmer found record pod count in several states. USDA said today that pod counts were down from a year ago. And so that's interesting to me. But I could see the bean yield possibly falling off a little bit. Wouldn't be surprised with that. It makes some sense. I haven't had many bean yields reported. The ones that were good. But not the knock your socks off type of yields that we're hearing from corn. So I would say that I'm leaning towards corn going up a bushel or two, and that's going to partially offset some of this good demand tightness. For soybeans, I think the big story continues to be the fact that our export sales are way behind where they need to be to come close to that $1.85 billion that the USDA is currently using. The only way we're going to make that is if we have a crop production problem in either Argentina and or Brazil. So at the current pace, we're not going to make the 1.7. So we've got a current carryout projection of 550, I believe they lowered it to. That kind of carryout, 12.5%, the last time we were in that neighborhood, we had an average farm price of 857, and that was during the 2019-220 year. So beans are overpriced at this point, given that type of carryout. But I think what we're seeing with Mato Grosso is keeping some support, as well as the dry problems that we've had here. So, you know, I'm heavily hedged on soybeans, have been for a long time, less so on corn. And, you know, we need to be careful in here as we head into what's going to be, we're going to be hit with a wall of corn. And, you know, can we hold up the futures prices just because of what we see possibly happen down the road? Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But I'd be looking at ways of getting floors set in here on this little price spike in corn, and certainly in soybeans as well.
Brian, how about you? What kind of marketing advice do you have for producers on corn and beans?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. So I kind of talk big global picture, talk about the 25 corn. I want to make sure I'm clear on this. I'm talking about it from the end user perspective, that whether corn's 440 or 370 or 380, it's cheap corn. It's a cheap commodity. It's a commodity that should be bought and bought aggressively. You can't grow it for that. In the very short term, agreed. We got a lot of corn that's going to be pushing into the pipeline here in the near term. Farmers will store what they can. I don't think they're interested with the carry in the market trying to pay for commercial storage. So I think we've got some near-term supply issues that are going to be problematic. That being said, when I step back and look at the big picture, I don't know if I'm that pessimistic. I think we'll have more of a sideways market. What we're seeing is some really nice technical activity. We're seeing prices that are relatively cheap. And I'll point out 2014, the December corn contract bottomed on the 30th of September, went off the board in December at 398.5. The bottom was at 318.5, so a very substantial recovery. And when it went off the board at the same price that it was in mid-July to early July. So those So I'll just highlight that particular year. I just happened to be on the road a lot, crisscrossing the Midwest, and saw an outstanding crop. Didn't matter where I was, and the market finally broke, and the bears took charge and really hammered this. But it bounced right back out of it, eventually posting a pretty nice inverted long-term head and shoulders formation. That was 10 years ago. The cost of production, inflation, everything else will keep farmers from aggressively selling any of this new crop corn. So while we may have a lot of corn coming, I think it still behooves the end user to act smartly. When I see $23 milk prices, when I see cattle prices in the mid-180s, when I see crude oil trading in the $70 area, it behooves the end user to make sure that they're covering their needs. And as an example, talked to a dairy producer in Idaho. They've booked everything for the next year in corn and soybeans. They're not waiting around to see if a bottom or the market might drop back. They're looking at value. And I think that value proposition is what helps to support the underlying price activity in the market. Doesn't mean prices can't go lower. It just means that today is a big wake-up call to the end user. What are you waiting around for? Another 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents? Is it worth the risk? Something comes along, stays dry in the Black Sea, stays dry in Brazil. All of a sudden, this fund money flips hard, and the next thing you know, you've got a rally when you least expect it. Now you've got end users chasing the market.
Mike Zuzulo, I'm going to put you on the spot, and the others can jump in on this just a little bit. The FarmDoc Daily website included an article yesterday from North Dakota State University agricultural economist. Roughly speaking, it outlines three different versions of protectionist trade policies that could be in play after the election. One of them is actually a congressional trade policy where they would take away what we used to call most favored nation trade status from China. That one actually has the least impact on U.S. exports of corn, soybeans, wheat, and beef, but we'll stick with soybeans, at around a 15.5% drop. However, the largest one, which would be a 60% tariff on Chinese goods coming in, and then a 10% tariff on other goods coming into the United States, would result in a 70% drop in soybean exports. I want to say 40% for corn and wheat and 25% for beef. Those are enormous numbers. How do you deal with those? Should they deal with them yet? Should they think about them as it's related to the coming market? Because it's not exactly a Republican or a Democrat thing. It is across the board. There is potential for more trade issues.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you brought this up because I think it ties together what we've all been talking about a lot. We really have been dealing with, for the better part of 2 years since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, a weather and supply driven market, Todd, and those are meant to be hedged and meant to be sold. I'm not going to go into this big economic theory like I usually do and bore you, but I will say that the November 25 beans hitting 1060 again today, looking like they could want to maybe break out to the upside on what looks maybe to be a double bottom in the daily chart, is first and foremost on my radar screen right now because of what John and Brian have been talking about with this acreage swap. Argentina is already talking about it. The Buenos Aires Grains Exchange already saying that more beans are probably going to be planted versus corn because of the dry weather. We've got this megaport in Peru that's coming on board that Brazil has been itching to get built with China's help and China's money. That's going to be a big deal to take about a week of shipping and shipping cost out of the price of Brazilian beans heading over to China. Since the Russian invasion, the bilateral trade and this new East, new West, as I call it, has really developed. And we've got trading regimes now in agriculture is the tip of the spear, i.e. China is looking for anybody except the United States to buy from when it comes to soybeans, especially because they need the soybeans the most. And so I really do think that's where you, like the November 24 beans, I want to make as much room as I can for corn. It's the same thing with Nov 25. I really don't want to get caught with a 950 sale in November 25 futures when I'm at 1060 as you and I are speaking, because it's just a replay of what essentially happened this year, except we were up at 12, 12 and a quarter earlier this year. But make no mistake, China and their demand issues are a factor in this market, and those export-import numbers that China put out, the customs data put out, we are not getting the market share that USDA says we're going to get, and it really calls into question that 109 import number that they stuck with on the WASDE report on Thursday.
Well, I'd like to just add a little bit to that. Excellent points. And, you know, it's a major deal when you're sitting here, and again, Bevin Everett, in his comments this afternoon on his Stone comments, said that at our current price and the current projected carryout of 550, we're about a buck high, maybe on futures. So is the trade expecting the yield to go down? Probably. Is the trade worried about what's going on in Brazil? Probably. What the trade is not focusing on, maybe as much as they should, is this export problem. And again, it's only going to get worse as long as the production is there. So, you know, going into the first debate, the Biden and Trump debate, I was back in what, late July, I was 100% hedged in one fashion or another on soybeans. The evening of after the debate was over that evening, I went to 125% price, in large part due to the fact that, you know, Trump has talked about 60% tariffs and 100% tariffs on certain products. That will be devastating. And then if we go into October and we're getting hit with a wave of soybeans, you know, price is still looking good, and we're seeing 50, 60, 70 million bushel export weeks instead of 70, 80, 90 million weeks. You know, this thing could turn ugly in a hurry, and we'll be hoping that the price of corn can help support the price of soybeans. So I would be a very aggressive hedger, at least getting some downside, some tight downside coverage in these soybeans at this point. Corn, I think we have some potential longer range, but I'd be very worried about soybeans falling into the low nines at this point.
So let me start with soybeans here. I got November beans at trade at 1010. I too have been very, from a supply perspective, very defensive of the bean market. And I think farmers should continue to behave that way, even though I made the argument that this drier weather I think is going to nip yield, and that may be in the marketplace. We talk about South America. But let's assume that South America gets some weather and then our crop yields come in at 53 bushels an acre. 500 million bushels of carryout doesn't spell $10 beans. It probably spells back toward $9 beans. So I would encourage producers to not get too deep in the weeds trying to outguess the weather and trying to outguess or listen to too many analysts. And, you know, what I would concentrate on is the strategic part of this. And how do we shore that bottom up? Do we make cash sales? Do we look at some type of a put strategy, bear put spread? Do we get aggressive and buy a put, sell a call, sell a couple of calls, challenge the market? But I would defend the market. I would still defend corn. We're still headed toward harvest. Where I might disagree with sort of the view of the world is that these export markets continue to look problematic. But bear in mind, these are cheap prices, and the end user has been rewarded by being, let's call it, lazy and a just-in-time inventory manager. If that changes, so does the world. And that's the dynamics of markets and what makes markets special. There isn't a formula. Emotion comes in, rationale comes in. Dynamics are changing all the time in the functionality of crop production and trying to outestimate crop production primarily on the heels of weather. So I would be very strategic to defend these prices, but also try and leave myself opportunity for things to move. It's hard to have it both ways. You can't talk about climate change and world temperatures at record levels and talk about continuous record crops and continuous poor demand. There's going to be fluctuations. I think my bias would be defensive. That's proved well for producers. but we're also at long-term historical low prices. Stocks to usage numbers in corn start to look a little bit more attractive, and should trigger end user buying on pullbacks. And that's really what we've seen the last month. We're looking at December corn prices as an example. Today, 406. December corn was at 406 the first week of July. Think about that. It's saucer bottoming. There's not a lot of selling interest down here any longer in the corn market. I would still defend it, but it doesn't appear that there's a lot of interest from the fund money to add the short positions. There's too much risk there.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org, willag.org. And there today you will find the article from the North Dakota State University Ag Economist on trade policies and tariffs and the impact they can and do have on agricultural products and their projections. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Brian Doherty from TotalFarmMarketing.com, John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities, and Mike Zuzlo at GlobalCom Research.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.